The prophet Isaiah was probably the most poetic of all the prophets. And one of the reasons we read more from him in the liturgy than any of the other prophets is poetry, like any art, kind of speaks to us on a level that's very human, but also divine, that lifts us up out of our normal way of looking at things, provides certain insights that are almost instinctive, happening on the intuitive level rather than the rational level. And we have a wonderful example of that in that first reading tonight. Jerusalem is set on a hill, and it's actually a mountain, not like the Rockies, but, you know, bigger than any of the Flint Hills. And the Kidron Valley and the Valley of Gehenna, they flow down the east and west of Jerusalem and meet at the south. So there's this kind of steep cavern all the way around, except on the north, and even there it comes down gradually, so that the walled city of Jerusalem is really above everything else. And when the sun comes up in the east, it hits the stone buildings of Jerusalem before it hits everything else is in darkness all around it. And so it stands out like a jewel. And that's the image that Isaiah has in mind when he's talking about that reading. This light will shine with the darkness surrounding it. The world is in darkness and sin, but the light of God is coming to light it up and shine forth this beauty and this radiance. And it'll be so magnificent that all the nations will come streaming toward it. Okay, when Isaiah says that, he's really talking about the 12 tribes. He's really talking about Israel. And the 12 tribes were only united during the time of King David. The rest of the time, they were half enemies of one another. They were not united at all. But his vision is that they'll all get back together again. And that was kind of the overarching hope of the whole Old Testament period, that the salvation of the human race would be symbolized at least by the 12 tribes coming back together again. St. Paul, in that second reading, elaborates on what Isaiah is saying, and he says he thought it was the 12 tribes. Now the revelation, the light, has shone in a new way so that we can understand through the power of the Holy Spirit that the salvation is not just for the Jews, it's for everybody. And that we're all co-heirs of the promise, even the Gentiles, even the pagans, even those who have no faith at all. They're all brothers and sisters in the one family of God. And that's, of course, an insight that was radical at the time of St. Paul. We kind of take that for granted now, although sometimes we suffer from the same exclusivism as the Jews did back then. We think it's only the church. And what do we mean by the church? Is it just the Roman Catholic Church, or is it all the Christian churches, or does it include the Jews, and does it include the Muslims and the Buddhists? And because of our humanity, we're always looking for exclusivity and one-upmanship. And the Feast of Epiphany is that one day of the year where the readings and the liturgy just blows all of that out of our mindset and says, come on, everybody, God's salvation is for all. Sometimes God is found in the ordinary, and we are guilty sometimes of looking for God in the extraordinary, you know, in that image of Jerusalem with, you know, shining like a jewel with darkness all around, or a breaking in the clouds, or, you know, some kind of catastrophic events. But actually, God is found in the everyday. And this is another aspect of the Feast of Epiphany. You know, in Matthew's Gospel, the Magi come from the east, and they bring their gifts for a newborn king, and they follow this star, which symbolizes, of course, the light, the revelation. And Epiphany means manifestation or revelation. But when they get there, they find this little child in a manger, in a stable. hardly what they were expecting. You don't find kings in that kind of situation. And in fact, in the Gospels, everything is turned upside down. You notice that Herod calls in the chief priests and the scribes, the experts, the scholars, and he says, where is this Messiah to be born? Well, they know all of the law. They know all of the research. They've got it all together. Without any hesitation, they say, oh, it's going to happen in Bethlehem of Judea. You know, all the texts say that. We know that. And yet they don't bother to go there and look. They just stay in Jerusalem. The only three people who go and look are the Magi from the east who aren't even Jewish, who don't know anything about this. But all through the Gospels, the light, the sight, the blindness, the darkness, they're played against each other. One of my favorites is the man born blind, you know, and Jesus cures him, and they say, aren't you the man that was born blind? How is it that you now see? Well, I don't know, but he rubbed mud on my eyes and now I see. Well, you must be a sinner because you were blind from birth. Well, I don't know. And at the end of that story, when they seek Jesus out and accuse him of curing on the Sabbath and being a sinner himself, they say to him, surely you're not suggesting that we're blind, are you? And he says, well, if you were born blind, there would be no sin in that. But we see, you say, and your sin remains. It's like a Shakespearean clown. Who's the clown and who's the knowing people here? Who's blind and who is seeing? Quite often, it's the poor, the lame, the blind, the handicapped, the homosexual, the outsider, someone in an invalid marriage, an illegitimate child. Often it's those people who show us Christ. Christ is found everywhere and most often in the most unexpected places. And one of the most unexpected places of all is in our own hearts. Thornton Wilder, one of the great 20th century authors, wrote that play called Our Town. And he wrote in a commentary one time that art, poetry, whatever, sometimes reveals to us things in the ordinary that we miss. But it's something that we instinctively knew all along, but we didn't know it, and we didn't know it for sure until the light shone on it. And so in Our Town, at the last scene, this young mother dies in childbirth, and so they're burying her in the cemetery. And so there are all these dead people, characters, and they're talking to her because she's now dead too. And she says, oh, I just want to go back for one day. I just want to go back one day and relive one day of my life, because she feels like it's been robbed from her. And her mother-in-law says, well, if you do that, make sure you pick an ordinary day. Don't pick some special day where great things happen. Don't pick your wedding day or anything like that. Pick an ordinary day. So she does, and she picks her 12th birthday, and she goes back, and she looks all around, and she says, I just can't hold it all. I can't take it all in. I just can't love it enough. I can't see it enough. And when she comes back after that experience to those other dead people, they say, you see, people are living their lives and they're not paying attention. And they're missing all the glory that's happening all around them. They're missing the divine life that's in them and in their families and in their neighbors. And they're blinded. They don't see it. And she says, but you know, I kind of knew it all along. And that's the way we are. Because we come from God and are like God, we're created in God's image, we knew all along that salvation was ours. We knew all along that it included everyone. But we were blinded by our prejudices, blinded by our fears, blinded by our not paying attention, But when the light shines on it, we say, oh yeah, I knew that. That's so true. It speaks to my heart because I've been there and I'm going there.